UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
The continuous improvement in implant technology and technical advancements have enabled specialists to offer alternatives for patients with hearing loss who no longer can benefit from a hearing aid. My guest is Dr. Benjamin McGrew. He's an otolaryngologist and a neuro-otologist at UAB Medicine. Dr. McGrew, explain a little bit about hearing loss, and does it necessarily follow that age will result in hearing loss?
So yes, it is typical that patients will acquire hearing loss as they age, but it doesn't necessarily follow that they will acquire hearing loss. You will occasionally see patients that are 80 years old and have completely normal hearing with no detectable hearing loss, but the majority of patients will develop a hearing loss around early 60s, maybe even late 50s, that's really mild at that point but can progress.
Let's talk about the etiology and some of the common conditions and factors that can lead to hearing loss. Are certain professions more likely to do it? They used to say things like, you know, if you had headphones on or if you listened to music too loud. Tell us about some of the common causes besides age.
So, of course, the most common cause since the Industrial Revolution is noise exposure besides age. And in addition to noise exposure, infectious disease and or mechanical problems within the ear often cause additional hearing loss. You can have congenital hearing loss or familial hearing loss. That is, a child can be born with hearing loss that's typically genetically triggered, or they can acquire a hearing loss that's also inherited.
Ooh, so does it run in families if your parents wore hearing aids or had hearing loss in their 60s and 70s? Are you more likely and more at risk?
Yes, definitely. It's definitely the case.
Interesting.
Even in age-related hearing loss, there's certainly a much higher incidence in patients whose parents had the same problem.
Wow. So what did you used to do? What used to be done when people had hearing loss? And what is different now with this new technology and the advancements that have been made in your field?
So for the most part, in cases of sensory neural hearing loss, the main treatment option has been for years the use of hearing aids. But in more recent times, the expansion of surgically implanted devices for hearing has developed, and that's certainly changed significantly in the last 5 years.
So tell us about some of them. Tell us about the types of conductive hearing loss that can be surgically corrected or improved, and some of the newer implant hearing devices, and why, Dr. McGrew, you might look to something like a hearing aid versus a cochlear implant versus a brain stem implant. Tell us about the different types and who they might be for, a little patient criteria.
Sure. So there are several different issues that might be corrected. For example, a patient that has a conductive hearing loss, which is usually means that they have a mechanical problem in their ear and that the inner ear itself is intact, those patients might benefit from, you know, primary reconstruction of their mechanical system, that is, closure of a perforation in the eardrum and or just a mechanical prosthesis being placed in the middle ear to bridge the gap between the eardrum and the inner ear. That's a more simple or simplistic mechanical repair. Other types of implants that can be used for the same thing include a bone conduction implant, which is usually an osseointegrated titanium implant, where a hearing aid is attached to that implant. It'll also bypass the ear canal and the eardrum, as well as the mechanical system, and directly send that sound through the bone to the inner ear. In addition to these kind of mechanical or bypassing these mechanical problems, the inner ear can also be treated either with implantable hearing devices like implantable hearing aids or cochlear implants where an electrode is inserted in the cochlea directly and that the hearing nerve or auditory nerve is directly stimulated with an electrical stimulus after the sound is transduced into an electrical signal, or even with brainstem implants. And in this case, it's very similar to a cochlear implant, but instead of placing an electrode in the inner ear, electrodes are placed by a patty in the brainstem directly, achieving the same thing as a cochlear implant, where there's an electrical stimulation that's directly applied to the brainstem to restore hearing after a sound's been transduced from an external processor.
So with the implant procedure, first of all, letting other physicians know, is this something that you're typically doing in office, or is this in a surgical suite? And these bone conducting devices and things that you're discussing, are these permanent? Are they removable? Do they need battery work? How do they work?
Certainly. So the an osseointegration implant is placed in the operating room, as are the other devices we were discussing. The patient will often be, or their implant, the external device on their implant or the hearing aid that's attached to the osseointegration implant would be typically adjusted, reprogrammed in the clinic, but the actual procedure is done in the operating room. The same is the case for the cochlear implant or the brainstem implant. Those are done in the operating room, and once the patient's healed, they're activated, but they're typically, at least the cochlear implant is activated in the clinic, whereas the brainstem implant is activated in the operating room because of the potential for a problem with direct electrical stimulation to the brainstem. It's done in a more controlled setting. Once it's been activated and the range of potential currents to be used have been applied and been deemed safe, then those are changed or adjusted in the clinic setting.
How are your outcomes? What have you been seeing as a result? Do you have a favorite?
I mean, certainly the cochlear implant is a remarkable device where a patient goes from being deaf to hearing at a very quiet level. So it's very appealing and very satisfying to because the patients have such a dramatic change. A typical problem is the patient can go from not being able to hear thunder or having heard thunder for all their life to complaining that they don't know a sound when it turns out it's just the leaves in the tree moving when the wind blows. So there it's a dramatic difference in what their world is able to perceive. And so it's very satisfying. So,
looking forward to the next 10 years in the field, Dr. McGrew, what do you feel will be some of the more important areas of research?
Well, certainly the modification of cells already present in the inner ear, trying to get them to reform hair cells, would be a very significant benefit, as the source of sensory neural hearing loss is typically related to loss of inner ear hair cells. That is a lot of move towards that is being made. Initially, the thought was that you could implant stem cells, but it looks like more like we'll be able to modify cells that are present with the potential to restore hearing in that way. That would be very nice.
Thank you so much. Tell us about your team at UAB Medicine.
Well, we have a team of audiologists that help us to assess the patient preoperatively and also program the implants after they've been placed. We have as a neurotologist. I'm usually the one placing these implants. We're going to have a new neurotologist next year as well, in addition to me. And we have a neurosurgeon that helps us with the auditory brainstem implants, Dr. Winfield Fisher. To place these, as these are very technically challenging but elegant devices, and that makes up the team.
Great information. Thank you so much. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.